From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is KCRW's program of stories and original documentaries. It's a part of KCRW's Independent Producer Project, a laboratory for independent radio producers, writers, and performers. And today on the program, what does a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup have to do with an ancient African deity?
That peanut butter hit my chocolate! Your chocolate hit my peanut butter!
Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Today on Unfictional, we introduce you to the King of Beginnings, Master of Doorways, and Trickster Spirit of Chaos.
Ah! One who has the power to alter reality, warp time, delve in what we think of as the impossible or the absurd.
Today on Unfictional, it's the God of Chaos. Let's begin this way. Think of the last time you went out to dinner. Not a chain restaurant or In-N-Out Burger. I mean a nice restaurant, a special event place. Hopefully you sat in a reasonably comfortable chair, the place had some tasteful decor, you found something on the menu that sounded good, you had some pleasant, lively conversation, eventually the server brought a beautifully presented plate, and you had a fulfilling meal. Now, maybe you didn't think about it at the time, but while you were there, you didn't actually experience that whole restaurant. Somewhere in that dining room, there was a doorway. More than a doorway, a portal. On one side, your side, pleasant conversation, happy people, delicious food, calm, clean, orderly. But on the other side, through that doorway... This is a busy restaurant kitchen. Actually, it's a scene from a restaurant movie, Ratatouille, but you get the idea. In order to bring that elegantly prepared, delicious meal to you sitting in that cheerful dining room, there needs to be a kitchen like this one, in a state that can be described as chaos.
Hot. There are all these sources of fire. Equipment balanced precariously on shelves all around you. Pans hanging down from the ceiling or from weird jerry-rigged hooks attached to ventilation hoods. There are knives everywhere. People working in the environment are under tremendous pressure, and often they are self-medicated.
That's Evan Kleiman, chef and host of KCRW's Good Food.
You couldn't really create a more perfect environment for chaos to happen than a professional kitchen.
The chaotic restaurant kitchen has even become a staple of reality television.
The duck's burned! You're cooking in a burnt pan, you... You're gonna blow fire in your face, you donkey!
The pressure, the screaming, and on top of that, in too many restaurants that you'd even want to know about, there's that little issue of
rot.
There's that moment where they make themselves known. They come in through the sewer pipes and they will poke their head up out of a floor sink. And they're wet, which just makes it just an order of magnitude of disgustingness. And they stick their head out, and you're like, oh no, please. And the top half of your body is engaged in the act of cooking. The bottom half is playing soccer with vermin, usually with an assist from an accommodating waiter who will make sure to keep that little animal from running into the dining room.
They say that sometimes, if you find out how a magic trick is done, it's actually more impressive than seeing the performance from the audience. And I think the same thing can be said for a restaurant kitchen. Because for a chef trying to create something beautiful and delicious, that hot, stressful, vermin-infested chaos isn't necessarily a negative. It's just part of the magic trick. Because without all that chaos, without all that madness, as a chef, you'd lose focus.
You totally lose focus, and even though you are creating pieces of beautiful fish or a gorgeous piece of braised meat, you are the machinery creating these widgets. So you have to be in a rhythm. So if it's not fast-paced, you're going to lose your sense of rhythm. It's sort of famous within the business that if you have a really, really slow night, that's when everything is going to get really screwed up. Orders are going to get forgotten. The waiter isn't going to be at the pass to pick something up and serve it quickly. There's something about the pressure that's created by all that chaos that is necessary for the machine to run well.
What goes on a busy night in a professional kitchen is not just chaos, it's a creative chaos. Part of the process a lot of creative people go through. Just like in a restaurant kitchen, there's creative chaos on a movie set, in a corporate brainstorming session, in a Jackson Pollock painting. It's about throwing enough randomness and unpredictability into the activity so you can create happy accidents.
I had an experience where I was teaching a cooking class. I'm in front of all these people, but my buttons were being pushed by a student who was extremely precise and very particular, and I tend to be the opposite of that. So she was making me a little flustered, and we were working on a poached Turkish apricot that was going to be stuffed with mascarpone. And so I went to put together the poaching liquid, and I poured in salt instead of sugar. And so I had all these people staring at me. And I know they're thinking, well, she's going to have to throw that away, or now we're going to waste all this time. And I said, okay, this is what happens in an actual restaurant environment. And I said, this is not unsalvageable. So I just took twice the amount of sugar as the salt that I put in. I put it in the dish. I reduced it. And I said, now we're going to serve fleur de sel poached Turkish apricots with mascarpone. It was delicious.
That's Evan Kleiman of KCRW's Good Food. You may depend on creative chaos without even thinking about it. It may just be the way you do what you do. But as I mentioned in the beginning of this program, there is a religion, older than Christianity, older than Islam, older than Buddhism, who celebrates this deity who is behind these happy accidents. Christopher Johnson is one of our contributing producers, and he's been working on a radio series that focuses on Black Americans who are today embracing the traditional religion of Nigeria's Yoruba people. The series is called The Orisha Project.
The Orisha are these deities that represent aspects of nature. They're elements of nature, and not just nature as in the sun, moon, stars, rain, and trees. It's nature also in human nature. It represents aspects of human nature and of realities around us and realities in our own heads and realities in terms of the ways that human beings interact with each other. So they represent both natural phenomena and also social phenomena.
The term Yoruba can refer to an ethnic group or a culture or a religion. In Nigeria, the religion is practiced, but most of the Yoruba people today are Christians or Muslims. But here in the U.S., many Black Americans have embraced Yoruba in communities including Oakland, California, where Christopher Johnson lives.
What I'm interested in is the ways that Black Americans are practicing this ancient tradition in the so-called New World. It's a very different context than the African context. It's different not only geographically, not only in terms of the timeline, but it's also different because many Black Americans turn to this religion for different reasons than Africans in Africa turn to it. Many Black Americans have turned to this tradition because for them, it is a way of connecting with their African identity. Almost to a person, Black Americans that I've spoken to about why they've embraced this religion say to me that it is like coming home.
Here's Christopher Johnson's story about one of Yoruba's most important deities. On KCRW.com, it's unfictional.
I am an African. Not the born in Africa to African parents kind of African. Not exactly by way of my folks either. Their most immediate roots are in North Carolina. I'm an African like this, the way Alton Ellis sang it in the 1970s. Out of a thorny history of genes, laws, and being raised right, I'm Black. And as a Black man, I'm an African descendant. Let them know, Alton. All right, look at him. African descendant, we all are African descendant. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, which kind of African? Wolof, Ewe, maybe Mandinka? I don't know. My mom's sister's done most of the digging, and her trail goes cold somewhere down south. In Addis Ababa, I pass as a native Ethiopian son. In Dakar, light as I am, not even close. But those Senegalese brothers ease down blocks the same way my uncles over here would rise like cool, patient giants out of their Buicks and LeBarons. I'm saying, just like them. That's only one piece, but it's there. Undeniable blackness. Absolutely African.
Think you where you come from? As long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African.
So it's in us, we African descendants. My ancestors, our ancestors, centuries ago, brought it with them. Medicine from the Congo, doggone science, the gods too. Gods from all over, from Dahomey, from the Akan, and from Yorubaland. As for the Yoruba, when they were stolen hundreds of years ago, did they cry out for answers from their gods, the deities they call the Orisha? Did they ask Ogun, father of iron, to account for those chains? Did they call out to Yemanja, queen of the oceans, pleading, where on earth are these ships taking us? And to their god of the crossroads, the keeper of portals, the one who lowers the drawbridge for new beginnings, they must have cried to him. A god with dozens of names.
Ose Otura, Eshu Odara, Logema Orun.
Surely he went with them. And when the ones who stole those Africans, my ancestors, from their homes, when those thieves saw this Yoruba god, they called him a devil.
Olato Opa.
But to the stolen ones, to their children, even to the ones born centuries later, this old god in a new place, he's still a god. He's still Eshu, still Odara, still Ibora. He's still here, today, at every intersection, every doorway, every text message, every satellite and radio signal. He is the internet. He is every possible way. And he is still a god. He's still Elegba.
Okay, so take this rattle in your hand. That's my Elegba right there, okay? You need to shake the rattle, tell him your name, and tell him why you've come so that he knows that you ain't no thief or nobody he needs to deal with, okay?
Okay. Ashe Elegba. From Yoruba land, through the Middle Passage, over to the so-called New World, across half a millennium, plus thousands and thousands of miles, Elegba soared. Out to here, to West Oakland, California, just inside Luis Atisha's front door. As a priestess, like many folks in Yoruba's clergy, she's got shrines to the Orisha, those divine forces of the faith, throughout her home. I've brought some oranges as a gift to the goddess Oshun. But to get to Oshun, to get anywhere in life, really, as the Yoruba see it, I've got to first salute the king of beginnings.
This is my Elegba. What you'll see is a figure that has cowrie shell eyes and mouth, and sometimes he'll have a feather coming out of his head and keys to the door.
Why?
Because he's the master of doorways, right? Cigar, rum, palm oil.
Hershey bars, popcorn, starlight mints. At Eshu's shrines around the world, devotees bathe the childlike deity in gifts. Keeping him happy means he looks out for you. he clicks on the light to the room where your dreams live. As a divine messenger, Ilegba carries your wishes safely to the other sacred forces that are spread like a constellation all around us. And Ilegba switches the tracks. He is the spark. He is your username and password. He turns the key. To get messages in or out, you've got to pass through him.
Keys to the door.
Why?
Because he's the master of doorways, right?
His tolls, tobacco maybe, or a rooster's blood poured out to the only one with license to traffic our dreams out to the deities. Because life is reciprocal, the elders say. To get, you give. That's why the children of Olodumare, Yoruba's most high god, that's why they propitiate Ilegba to open the doors.
Every morning I get up, I salute Ilegba, I thank him for keeping me safe through the night and for waking me up in the morning, and then I open the front door and I let in the new day. That's when I open the curtains and prepare myself to deal with the outer world.
The world, a crazy one, crammed with illogic, seeming nonsense, and chaos. Ilegba everywhere.
The world,
the crammed
world,
with nonsense,
seeming nonsense, and chaos.
Illogic,
Ilegba,
crammed everywhere.
Ah! Well now, see?
Oh, goodness. See? It's starting already.
Now, you know, now scientists are beginning to talk about a thing called chaos theory. The Western world, which loves to believe that it controls everything, has had to deal with there can only be order coming out of chaos. Ilegba is that chaos. He is that creative chaos that makes the seemingly impossible possible. What I'm talking about is one who has the power to alter reality, warp time, delve in what we think of as the impossible or the absurd, okay?
Peanut butter, chocolate.
Think of Ilegba like this, a Reese's peanut butter cup. More like the idea of the cup, to mix chocolate and peanut butter. This is Tisha's idea, her story, not mine. But it kind of works. The guy who invented the peanut butter cup, Mr. H.B. Reese, imagine he owns one of those old-timey general stores. He's tidying up, stocking shelves,
and he's carrying a sack of flour. And as he walks past the counter, the sack of flour hits a block of chocolate and it falls in the peanut butter barrel.
My chocolate is in my peanut butter.
In Yoruba, there's an Orisha of the rivers, a god of lightning, and one of iron. King Olodumare, that is, the Most High himself, he charged Ilegba alone to govern the Nexus. Eshu Ilegba, the divine trickster, lord of the equinox, dancing between dimensions. He is the master of the crossroads and of the gateways, the passing of old into a new order.
Oh, hey, you got your chocolate and my peanut butter.
And Mr. Reese picks it up, and he puts it in his mouth and he says, and Reese's peanut butter cup is born. Ilegba did that.
Reese's peanut butter cup.
They call Ilegba the trickster. He's the god that sticks out his
My chocolate
is in my peanut butter.
It's delicious.
Ilegba did that.
He's the god that sticks out his foot. We trip and stumble forward into entirely different realities.
Ilegba oftentimes deals in natural laws that we don't understand. Ilegba arranges earth, air, fire, and water in different combinations. Ilegba plays tricks and makes magic in ways that we don't understand.
He's the gap we make and the childlike force we laugh with when we laugh at ourselves. Through Ilegba, our mistakes can be fatal, or they can bring sweet, sweet fortune.
Ilegba played a trick on Mr. Reese, right, and caused him to perceive that this should come into being, okay? That's the trickster, not just some clown.
And so, as the master of chaos, he must have been there when the ships came from my ancestors. And then chains and rupture. The middle passage, an epic gateway, a cauldron of sea spray, blood, rape, and disorder. When Europeans met Elegba, they decided he was the devil. It happened in Africa, and then again here in America. It happened partly because African people were considered evil. Everything about them, their language, their skin colors, and certainly their gods. And maybe there was something in particular about Elegba, because his work is to try our souls. So the Christian mind saw in this god, maybe, something of their own fallen archangel, Satan. But Elegba lived on, even in the so-called New World, in Bahia, Brazil, in Matanzas, Cuba, and very likely down in the Mississippi Delta. An ancestor named Robert Leroy Johnson, he'd have heard something. His aunties would have known. His grandparents, who went to church and did root work, they'd have told a teenager about a force who lives at the crossroads. I went to the crossroads, fell on my knees. And that's just where they say Robert Johnson struck a deal with the devil, traded his soul to be crowned king. And the Lord of mercy, king of the blues. You can debate whether or not this really happened. Either way, the story is alive with Elegba. Not the devil part, but the crossroads part. Home to a power that opens portals and alters destinies. Didn't nobody seem to know me. Everybody passed me by. This god has survived in lots of ways. In some places, maybe he was passed through a filter of malevolence. But to others, he never stopped being sacred. Not on the ships, not in the sugarcane fields, not in the hood. Not in Robert Johnson's day, and not in mine. Listen to that. A celebration for Elegba the Divine. Not centuries ago, just this past New Year's Day. January 1st, another gateway, crossing from old into new. This is Elegba's day. So the Yoruba, the believers, right here in the Bay Area, they threw him a party. A friend invited me out to the celebration at a military base called Coast Guard Island. I see my friend, a priest, in a small ballroom with about 100 people. Most of the folks are dressed in pure white. He's dancing, too. Dancing with the others in front of sacred drums. Dancing holy dances, incantations that stitch Ile Orun to Ile Aye, heaven to earth. This is a New Year's Day bembe. It's a party they threw for all of the gods. And the gods came. One by one, through the door, invisible celebrities. Wise Obatala. Then, on her chariot of sea foam and conch shells, Yemanja. And look, there's Ogun, Shango, Oshosi. The warriors, loving their songs, marching in. And when they descended, the Orisha slipped on their children like robes. Feels nice on divine skin. A royal fit. Forget that serpent and the rainbow mess and what outsiders call being possessed. This is Holy Communion. Gods called down into human bodies just to walk among us and party with the people. Elegba came down, went inside of a man. I saw it. We all saw it. The deity borrowing his body for the sake of its flesh and its legs, so that Elegba could dance for the people, for the drums, and for our destinies. I I am an African. Not the born in Africa to African parents kind of African. My ancestors brought Africa with them centuries ago. Medicine, science, their humanity, and their gods. One of them, Elegba, he came. And he stayed. And he's still here. Still there. There at the crossroads. With his cigar or his pipe. His bottle of rum. Watching through cowrie shell eyes. He's smoking. And gazing. And judging. Elegba.
Elegba.
Elegba did that.
Elegba.
Elegba.
Forever.
Titi lai lai.
Elegba de anu ta werunde. Elegba de anu ta werunde. Bayamu soji mi. Elegba de anu ta werunde. Elegba. Elegba. Elegba de anu ta sondele.
That story was produced by Christopher Johnson. It was edited by Jacob Conrad and mixed by Bob Carlson. Christopher's series, The Orisha Project, is funded by a Knight Grant for reporting on religion and American public life, a program of the University of Southern California's Knight Chair in Media and Religion. You can find photos and other information at our website, kcrw.com/unfictional, and you can find a growing archive of all the episodes of the program there, too. You can like the show on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, at unfictional. You can podcast this show on iTunes or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. The music supervisor is Dan Wilcox. Production assistants from Monica Scott. Thanks to the Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation for their support. And I hope you'll join me next week for Unfictional from KCRW.com.